Hello and welcome to Illy's Coffee Talks. Season 3 is going to be about all my favorite topics, including slow living, inner work, entrepreneurship, creativity, spirituality, slow traveling, and health. I am Ophélie Cabanero, your host. Enjoy the episode. Good afternoon, Ellen.
Good afternoon.
You are right now talking from Stockholm?
Yes.
Outside of Stockholm?
Yes, just north of Stockholm.
It's amazing. I have so many questions I will ask you off podcast about this region. It's the actual reason of the call today. Swedish tips.
No. Yes.
So I'm based in Basel, and I think it's amazing that we can do this today.
Yeah.
I discovered you through, I think I told you in an email, via Pinterest, because mm-hmm. I was searching something about slow living.
Mm-hmm.
And then I signed up for the PDF you offer on your website and started to follow you on Instagram and started to listen to your podcast. And I'm super glad you're here today. Thank you so much for joining.
Thank you for having me on. I am super excited to be here and talking to you and getting to know you as well. It's been a pleasure so far getting to know you and what you do and everything that you talk about.
Likewise, yeah. I love your marketing, basically.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, Ellen, you are a creativity coach.
Mm-hmm.
This is also what I found amazing. I never saw that.
Cool.
I don't know if there are many like you out there, but in my world, this never happened.
Yeah. I know of a few others who do similar things as I do, but yeah, it's a quite new concept for me as well.
So do you want to maybe share a little bit what brought you here to do mm-hmm. what you're doing right now or these days?
Yes. So I am a creative coach, which means that I work with creatives. I work with people one-to-one. I also have a online community that I run with creatives. And I help people essentially do their creative projects. So I talk with people about everything from what they want to do, their like unique creative direction. I talk a lot about the creative process and how we can build good processes, good habits. And I also talk a lot about creative mindsets and creative fears and those kind of things that can be very big blockers mm-hmm. in our creative journey. Yeah. And well, I got into this because I am someone who has always dreamed of writing. I always wanted to be a fiction author ever since I was a kid, and realized when I was an adult and tried to start writing my first novel that it was very difficult actually to do the creative projects that you want to do. I tried to write this book of mine and struggled for a couple of years, worked on it on and off, and finally started to learn more about the creative process and how we can build good creative processes and everything about creativity and how it works and sort of healing that for myself. And I started blogging about it. And eventually that led me on to starting to help others with their projects and processes. So, and here I am now, creative coach.
So cool. That's what we'll dive into, I think. Maybe this is what I'm most interested in because I'm doing kind of the same thing. And I'm realizing, wow, even for entrepreneurship, I think mm-hmm. it's the same. I feel like creativity and entrepreneurship is like on the same level when it comes to those blockages and fears.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Agreed.
Yeah. So, and I think maybe now some people start to talk about it, but often, and I think you share that on your podcast, you don't see their process. And then you see all of a sudden, boom, superstar.
Yeah.
Either coach or artist, whatever. And
yeah.
you didn't see that process for them. And you think, wow, why can't I do that?
Yeah.
So why can't we? So first of all, it's a false image and everybody struggles, I guess. It's just that maybe not everybody talks about it.
Yeah.
And what did you, I picked on that word. What did you have to heal to be able to write your first book?
Well, like you say, I think that more or less all creatives struggle at some point. And I think that there is a lot that we have to sort of develop and create some kind of framework and basis for and foundation in our lives to be able to work on creative projects. And I think that this is the case because these are skills and habits and things that we don't necessarily learn from school and things like that. It's something that we have to figure out and develop. Well, not necessarily on our own, but creative projects do tend to be quite solo projects often. And this is, we sort of have to navigate that. It's often not navigated in group as it is with a workplace or in school. And so at some point when we start thinking, okay, so I want to create, maybe you want to be an artist or writer or something like that, then there are these things that we have to sort of get in place for it to work and for us to be able to work. And that's a part of a process that we rarely see in other creatives, because that is quite on your own and it's often in the early stages or before people get visible with their creativity. I think that it's very common that we don't see the mess, we don't see the all the things that we need to do and all the confusion of the creative process and all the blocks, because they happen so much behind the scenes.
Yeah, I feel my husband told me the other day, I was doing my German homework and I was like, no, but you know, sometimes we are doing tests, vocabulary tests in class. And I was like, no, but I have to win this test. And then you can win it. It's ridiculous. And you can win candies or whatever. And I was like, no, but I just want to win. And he was like, wow, if you were that dedicated with your creative projects or business, you would not win. He didn't say that, but you would be maybe further than you are now.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, but you know, learning vocabulary, we know how to do that since we are very small. We know how it is. It's learning something by heart.
Yes.
It's less difficult for depending on the brain of people, but it's something you know how to do and it's very straightforward. And the creative process, it's so unique to each and every one of us.
Yes.
We don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
And we're doing it alone, like you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It is a lot to figure out. And you asked me what I needed to heal in my own sort of creative process and creative journey. I think the biggest thing for me that I needed to heal was fear of failure and perfectionism. That's the thing that I struggled with the most when I started to try to write a book. And I think that a lot of it has to do with the way we talk about creativity and talk about creative projects. Because I had heard so many times growing up when you're sort of in that the school years and trying to figure out what you want to do in life. And I had heard so many times that being a writer, it's not very realistic and only the best people make it. Yeah. And if you want to get published with a book, then it has to be like top 1% or something like that. Mm-hmm. And this had created very like high stakes in that I I wanted to be a writer. I desperately wanted to be a writer. And that was something I've been dreaming of for a very long time. And I knew how hard it was, or I had gotten told how hard it was. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, I had to write in that perfect way, mm-hmm. that way that I didn't really believe that I could write. Mm-hmm. And so I started fearing not being able to write that well. Mm-hmm. Because that would mean that I wouldn't get published. And that in my mind meant that I couldn't be a writer. And that led to a lot of perfectionism. It led to a lot of creative blocks and a lot of procrastination as well. So that is, excuse me, that is what I really needed to heal. I needed to realize that, first of all, even if I wouldn't manage to get published, I could still be a writer. A writer is just someone who writes, mm-hmm. And that is what I wanted to do the most. It mattered more to me to actually write than to be a published author. Mm-hmm. So that was the first thing that I needed to be okay that maybe, okay, so maybe let's say that I would never get published. Do I still want to write? The answer was yes, I still want mm-hmm. to write. Mm-hmm. I love writing. And yes, I'll do my best to get published, or maybe I'll self-publish. And but that sort of threshold of, okay, I have to get to the point of being traditionally published to be able to be a writer. That is a story I had to rewrite, mm-hmm. to be able to actually enjoy writing and to be able to see that I can only do the kind of writing that I want to do and the kind of writing I'm able to do. And I can always learn more and I can always hone my skills as a writer, but I have to show up and create in the way that I can create and want to create right now. And that has to be okay. Doing my best, my version of best has to be okay. And not constantly beating myself up for not being that perfect version that mm-hmm. I think I have to be. Mm-hmm. That's probably the biggest thing I needed to heal.
So you said you rewrote the story. What did you, did, how does that look like? Did you just write then in a journal? Did you then burn the paper or what? Or did you do some energy work, or what, did you work with a coach yourself or a psychotherapist?
Well, when I started writing, like in the beginning, when I started to write, I didn't have that many tools. So I just started to write, and I had an idea. I started to write. I participated in NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, which is a challenge of writing 50,000 words in a month. Mm-hmm. I participated in that twice or three times, I think, and did that. So I did manage to get words out, and then I would read back what I had written and realize that I was not building the story that I wanted to build. I was not writing the book that I wanted to write. And here's where it also became problematic, in that I judged my own writing very harshly, while at the same time being a young writer who didn't have all the tools that I needed to create a good story. So What did I do next? I started learning more about like story structure and storytelling and character development and all of those kind of things. So that helped me improve my writing, and that looked very much like rewriting and seeing, okay, so I had written half a draft or one draft, and seeing that, okay, so where did I go wrong? What didn't work? And backtracking and replanning and rewriting. So I've done that a good couple of times over the years. I haven't worked with a creative coach or something like that. I have probably taken courses and such, and in other aspects of my creativity, taking courses. But yeah, it has been very much a diving into this and exploring this, yeah, on my own and mm-hmm. learning from it, and also sharing what I learned along the way.
And thanks for sharing. And I'll ask you more questions about writing since I'm doing it myself. But for the conditioning specifically, because you said you had to get rid of the fear of failure.
Mm-hmm.
And so what did you do specifically for that? You don't have to share also, but if there is something that could help maybe others listening to this.
Yes. So what I did when I realized, that by fearing failure, I was hindering myself from making progress in my writing. And so it was becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy in that, okay, so if I feared failure and feared so much about my writing, that led to creative blocks, which led to not writing and not getting better at writing. And that would mean that I wouldn't become a writer because I was hindering my own process.
Mm-hmm.
So it was becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy. And
mm-hmm.
when I realized this, what I did was that I spent 1 year of facing my creative fears. That's how I started blogging. Mm-hmm. I decided, okay, so the problem is fear. So what do we do? Okay, we face our creative fears. And that is one of the things that I think has had the biggest impact, in that instead of trying to avoid the things that scare me, I realized that I have to move towards the thing that scare me. And I think just a mindset shift
mm-hmm.
of thinking, okay, because our default is to avoid things that feel uncomfortable, mm-hmm. things that feel scary,
mm-hmm.
Things we have resistance around. That's our brain's default of like, okay, I'm not going to do that, or I'm going to try to find a way around it. But just when we make the mindset flip of, okay, so I'm going to move towards the thing that is scary, I'm going to accept that it's scary. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say, okay, that it is scary. It's going to be scary. I'm going to do it. Anyway, I'm going to move towards the thing that scares me. Mm-hmm. Just that shift in how we approach things can make a really big difference. And that in itself makes the fear soften a little bit. And actually doing things that scare you will make the fear soften. So that is one of the things that I did. Another big thing of healing fear of failure, partly was this of accepting failure and saying that, okay, so what if I fail? Fine, maybe I don't reach my goals, and maybe that's okay. Maybe it isn't the worst thing that could happen. Maybe I want to work on it anyway. So making that fear smaller in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the final thing I would say that has made the biggest difference is in the actual process of creating, when we are focused on something like fear of failure, we are very focused on the outcome of things.
Mm-hmm.
So getting published, for example, that's an outcome. So we get very locked in on the result, and we build up this perfectionism around, okay, so I have to get to this perfect result. Mm-hmm. When we are thinking like that within our creative process, that makes it very difficult to actually do the work, because we are always thinking, oh, this is not a good result. So what I found is that what we have to do is that we have to let go of the results when we're in the process. We have to focus on the process itself and focus on our own joy and our own inspiration and our own creativity within the process, and let go of the results while we're working. Then we can check back in with, okay, so how did it turn out? Did it turn out well? What can I do different? But when we're sitting down to write, for example, we have to focus on, okay, so I'm doing this because I love to write, mm-hmm. for example. And that helps. That helps a lot.
Thanks. Yeah, I feel that. I feel this pressure so much. Mm-hmm. I'm in a writing group and since the beginning of the year. And it's a whole process. There's a coach in there, and she gave us like all the steps to writing a book. And one of the things that came, she asked us, why do you want to do it? And I said, well, I didn't say it. She then rephrased it in that way. She said, okay, recognition. Okay, it's okay. You know, it's just important to know you want recognition with this book. Yeah, it's okay. But then the problem is you put so much pressure on yourself, because that's actually the one of the goals. Of course, I like writing, but there's also this hidden thing behind it. And that, yeah, creates writer blocks, creates, it makes it so hard to actually write. Yeah. And on the days I'm like, whatever, then it flows. And it's, I don't know if you've experienced that too, this doing the same thing, but sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's not.
Yeah, most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, sorry, you wanted to share something?
No, I was just thinking that maybe we'll get into talking a little bit about resistance. I know that you, you're curious about resistance and resistance. I think the term might have been made by Stephen Pressfield, who wrote The War of Art, a fantastic book, which I recommend to all creatives and writers especially, and people who struggle with procrastination especially. So resistance is this concept of when we want to do something, we want to do something that feels meaningful to us, but it's difficult to sit down and actually do it. We feel the resistance towards doing something that we actually want to do, but in the moment of doing it, we feel the resistance. And I think, if I'm not misremembering, I think that Stephen Pressfield somewhere in the book says that all resistance is fear. And I would agree with that. I think that fear is a really big part of it. And this thing that we've been talking about with perfectionism and holding on too tightly to the end results, things like that. Whatever fears we have, whatever kind of high stakes we have for a project, that gets in the way of getting to work with it. And this resistance that we feel, it can it's quite individual. It can take many different shapes. It often looks very much like procrastination in different shapes and forms. It can take the shape of, oh, I don't feel ready to start yet, in that I need to perfect my idea more before I actually get creating. It can be very mundane things like, oh, I have to do the dishes first before I can sit down and do it, or just simply never getting around to it in your week, even if you have the intention to do it, but you just never seem to find a time for it.
Yeah, that's perfect. Thanks for sharing it. How did it come up for you?
How did it come up for me? In the beginning, when I was trying to work on this novel, it was a very a very real thing in my body. In that, if I was intending to sit down and write, it was very like restless and moving around and trying to like force myself to sit down. And it was very like concrete, in that I felt very uncomfortable to sit down and write. And I think that this was because I sort of knew, or I had this idea that I needed to sit down and do something really good. And that made the pressure of sitting down to write really big, in that, okay, like I had to psych myself up to to do it. Sort of like if you're trying to do something that you know will be hard or difficult, or if you want to jump from the highest thing
at the pool.
Yeah, the pool. And you sort of have to psych yourself up for doing it, because it feels so big, it feels scary, it feels difficult to do it. And that's like my approach to resistance is that Yes, we can work with methods that do psych ourselves up to do it. A lot of procrastination tips is about sort of that, just force yourself to do it in some way. But I think that what really helps the most is to change that feeling around the project, to instead of always having to manage these emotions of, oh my God, it needs to be so good, it needs to be perfect. Healing that mm-hmm. will heal the relationship you have to the project, which will make it feel not as scary and difficult and hard to sit down and do it. Because we tend to put a bit too much pressure on ourselves with these projects.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically asking yourself, okay, why does it feel this way now? And trying to see what kind of emotion or fear is behind it.
Yeah. 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 That helps so much to just understand your own fears, doubts, whatever they are, mm-hmm. and to get to know them. And I don't know if you can hear it in the background, but I have a very meowing cat. He is a little bit obsessed about something. Not sure what. He goes on the meowing streaks, so it's currently in one.
No problem. It's cute.
Thank you, son. Where were we?
So, do you help people in your coaching to find out what kind of emotion? For example, a client comes and says, oh, I cannot sit down to write. And then would you help that person figure out, okay, why, what is the emotion, and then heal it?
Yes, that's definitely something we work on in my coaching, and it's something that comes up for everyone, whether procrastination is a big problem or a smaller problem, that we have ideas around things, and they tend to manifest in sort of as procrastination, as resistance, as having a difficulty with actually making the product that you want to make.
Mm-hmm.
So I have this coaching program that I'm just launching that mm-hmm. I call the Dream Project.
Mm-hmm.
And this type of project that I call a Dream Project is the projects that are maybe the first of a certain kind, or the start of something, or a change. And these kind of projects that I call dream projects are projects that are very important to us. So we tend to build them up really big in our minds. And we tend to have these big ambitions for the project or big visions. And they often also represent sort of stepping into our creative identity in some way, moving towards something. And that can also in itself create a lot of sort of fear and resistance because it's unknown. And so, yes, resistance and the kind of things that relate to resistance is definitely something that I work with my coaching clients.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about the project itself and everything that relates to the project itself.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also always get into sort of your personal relationship to the project and mm-hmm. How we can make that relationship better.
Amazing. Amazing. And what do you mean exactly by creative identity?
So creative identity is who you consider yourself to be as a creative, or who you want to be as a creative. So that goes into both the kind of terms we use, like I identify as a writer, I identify as a creative coach, I don't identify as a photographer, even if I do take quite a bit of photos, for example. So those are the sort of external markers of your creative identity, but it's also the more nebulous things of like, okay, so being connected with nature and the seasons, that is something that affects me as a creative and that I consider to be part of my creative identity. The fact that I want to go a little bit slower, I don't value things like hustling. I would say that that's probably part of my creative identity as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's knowing yourself as a creative and figuring out who you want to be, what version you want to be of whatever you want to be. So like I want to be a fiction writer, but there are a million type of fiction writers. Mm-hmm. So knowing that, for example, relationship type novels are much more my style than fantasy, for example. Mm-hmm. Knowing those things, and the more we sort of get to know our creative identity, the easier it becomes to focus on what you actually want to create and not get distracted by what maybe other people value or you feel like you should want to create.
And for you, it was pretty clear that writing was your thing because you wanted to do that since forever. Mm-hmm. But do you find sometimes that people want to do a certain thing because they have an idea of what that thing could be like, feel mm-hmm. like, and then they do it and they're like, oh, no, I don't want to
yeah.
do that.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. And the first thing I think of is business. Because I think maybe it's also depending on what kind of sphere you're in online, but I think that there is a big discourse online of sort of being self-employed as a creative and having your own creative business is sort of the thing everyone is supposed to want. And I've worked with quite a lot of creatives who have realized that that is not their dream, that the thing for them is not selling what they create. That's not the big important thing, and they don't necessarily enjoy doing much of that, but it's their creative self-expression that is the most important, and mm-hmm. and working with their creative skills and honing them, that is much more important to them. And if it's a small hobby side project, then that is totally fine for them. So I think, especially when something is seen as, idealistic in some way, mm-hmm. I think that can make us think we want to do things that aren't necessarily very aligned with our own values, or do things in a way that is not aligned with our values. So that definitely happens. Yeah. Most definitely.
And I think especially with the online world, all the mm-hmm. things we see on Instagram, it's easy to see something and think, oh yeah, I want to do that.
Yeah.
You might try it, or you might, it's also funny the projects that you have in your head. I have like so many ideas, and then I realize and I write them down, and then a year later I read it and I'm like, oh, well, that never happened.
Yeah.
And either I don't want to do it anymore, or I still want to do it. And then maybe I will try to figure it out, or another project is more important, and then I do something else.
Yeah. And this is, of course, also part of figuring out your creative identity and your creative direction, to try things or play around with ideas and realize which of them sticks and which doesn't. Yeah. I know I have had over the years so many different book ideas, for example, and some of them have stuck with me and some of them have felt like not quite right. And I haven't in the moment realized why, but looking back, I can see that, oh, actually, that wasn't the type of novel that I want to write, mm-hmm. For example. So I think that these things, when we feel that when we have ideas, we get inspired for things, inspired by other people maybe. And it's important to take note of what inspires us, because that tells us something. Mm-hmm. But it's also important to take note of the things that we feel some kind of like it's not quite right. Mm-hmm. And to look at that and think about that a little bit, because that also tells us something. Mm-hmm. And there's usually reason for it not feeling quite aligned.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, I never really thought of that. That it can be inspiring, but at the same time might not be completely aligned.
Yes.
Do you feel that in your body, or how do you figure it out? Or do you just try it and then notice?
That's a good question. I'm trying to think of something. I I thought about this a couple of months ago, and now I'm trying to remember what it was that it was inspiring me, but that it didn't feel aligned actually to do. Yeah, so I have had this YouTube channel for a while. I'm dialing down a bit now and focusing more on my podcast, but I've been doing this YouTube channel, and I've realized that there are certain types of YouTube videos that I enjoy watching that inspires me as a consumer. And my creative mind has a tendency to jump to, oh, I want to do something similar. The same probably with art as well. I enjoy art so much as a consumer, and I admire artists and their skills so much, and I can sit and look at like scroll Instagram and look at beautiful art and think like, ah, oh, it would be so cool to be able to do that, but I know for myself that I don't really have the patience for for making beautiful art. And I think that that's partly because I'm probably not that genuinely interested in the craft of it, because I have patience for other things. And also I think that I am more of a big picture person, and I think that especially detailed art, more the process of making it is more it's better for someone who's a little bit more detail oriented than I am. I get bored with it, with the details too quickly.
Yeah. Okay, so that was the example of.
Yeah, and how does it feel? What was the other question? I think it's, for me, it's about following the feeling and tracking the feeling. So I would say that probably the initial inspiration is similar, like feeling inspired in your body as well, like feeling that rush of inspiration. But for me, I think it's about how it lasts, and if it goes away, or when revisiting it, if that feels like it feels true. And I'm not sure I can put into words how how I feel if it's true, but it's probably a combination of here's where it get complicated, because it can feel a bit like resistance. And that is a big thing also, figuring out what is resistance and what is actually like your gut feeling that this is not right for you. That's the thing in itself.
that's my favorite topic right there. Yeah, because it's such a fine line sometimes.
It is. And since fear can be so incredibly sneaky as well, it can be very, very tricky to figure out which is which. What I try to think about and tell other people is that, is there a fear component there? Is there a part of it that okay, so this thing that you feel resistance around, do you also feel like, does it feel like something, this feels so nice, so cool, and also feels scary? If it has that component, it's probably resistance. If it's more that it's starting to feel a little bit flat in your mind and it feels a little bit like, I don't know, then it could probably be a misalignment. But yeah, it's a fine line.
And it's so interesting because also the way society works and how normal jobs work is, no, no, but you started something, you gotta stick to it.
Yeah.
And often those projects can feel like super inspiring at the beginning. And then at some point it's not aligned anymore. And then you don't know if you gotta stick to it or not.
Yeah.
For example, with the podcast, I started before the pandemic, and I was doing my podcast in cafes, and then it was not possible anymore. And then I was like, I am not doing them on Zoom. I am not going online for one more thing this year. You know, there was no way. And then I was also thinking, yeah, but podcast, but that's not really saving the world, is it? You know, it does. Crazy thoughts.
We
always need to think what we do needs to be the most amazing thing ever. and it's and nobody cares or nobody it's not helping or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I stopped doing them. And 1 year later, I started again because it just felt right. I started with a friend. We had things we wanted to talk about. And I was like, you know what? I'll do season two. And from since then, I do the podcast and it's a lot of fun. And yeah, sometimes we need a break or we need to a break to figure things out, I think.
Yeah.
And then what I learned is to not hesitate to think about it, feel into it, and then drop it if we need to drop it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you hit on something there with how linear we tend to view things, probably because of school and like business environments and how we sort of had this idea that we need to have, okay, you have one idea, I will write a plan and then I will follow that plan exactly and then it will be done and we will sort of have reached some kind of goal. And my experience is that the creative process is much messier than that.
Yes.
And when we try to fit it into that rigid of a format, either we don't manage to move forward with it, or we tend to end up somewhere that isn't the right direction. Because with creative projects, especially if there are they are sort of if you're still figuring out your creative direction and who you are and who you want to what you want to create, then the process of like having an idea and developing a project, that is also about figuring out like yourself as a creative. And the initial idea, it tells you certain things, but then there's a process of exploring and developing that idea, and it takes twists and turns, and that is part of the process. And yeah, it's much, much messier than our
it's
our
much
plan.
Messier and it takes time, and this is also something we're not used to in this kind of world where it needs to be done at a certain time and you need a deadline and you need goals and you need this. And that for me stresses me so much. Or the idea of having to post every week at the same time, I cannot do it. I tried, I can't. And then I stop altogether. So it just doesn't work for me. And it's the same for marketing and business, but maybe we can talk about that on another podcast. But to have this sentence, you know, everybody says you need that sentence that says who you are helping people, who you're helping and how. And I had that sentence. I have it sometimes on Instagram and then I delete it again because I'm like, no, this is not what I want to do. It's very limiting, I feel.
Yes. And I think that that is also such a human thing, that we want things to be simple and we want things to like, okay, if I have that sentence, everything is going to like be okay from there. And with this sort of more of a spreadsheet type of thinking around projects, I think that we get into our heads that we will solve the challenging aspects of creativity and or if it's business. Which, I would say is also creativity. And we have this idea that if we can just find the simple answers, then we will be able to sort of get out of the mess, and that we always crave that those simple truths. And I think that some tend to, tap into that a little bit too much online, and tap into that sort of need in us to have the simple answers. If you just follow these five steps, everything's going to be perfect. When in reality, it's more complex than that.
Yeah.
And that's also why what makes creativity fun, that it is complex and nuanced.
And we're all different, so it's going to be different for all of us.
Yes.
Yeah. And you say on your podcast, it's good to stay in the,
how do you say it exactly? In the
Idea
idea
stage.
phase, yes, yeah,
Yeah.
stage. And at the same time, at some point, you have to start doing something about it.
Yes, yes, yes. This is also the complex part of it, right? So,
yeah.
Yes, the idea stage is important. And yes, we can stay too long in the idea stage. So I think that we have a sense that we are not supposed to be in the idea stage. So the idea stage, quickly, is just the part of a creative project where you are figuring out what the project is and, yeah, sort of what you want it to be. And I think that we, since the part of creativity that is visible from the outside is when we're making like actual progress. So if it's a book, for example, writing words and saying, okay, I wrote 1,000 words today, that feels concrete and that feels like progress and it's something that you can show someone else. And that's what we count when we count, like, okay, I am productive. I am a creative. I'm doing my thing. But the thing with figuring out your idea and figuring out what you want your book, if it's a book, to be, that is also an important part of the project. And if you start writing when you don't know, okay, so there are people who very much like going into projects with knowing very little about it and figuring out along the way. And absolutely, that's a valid way of doing it as well. But in general, if you move into the project before you have really, really thought about it for yourself and realized, okay, so this is what I want my project to be. If you move on too quickly, you are going to have to backtrack eventually because you are moving forward without really knowing what you're moving towards.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes the process very difficult. Was someone who said that if you want to do something, or it's very hard to do something if you don't know what it is you want to do.
I totally agree. But at the same time, I also feel, for example, for my book right now, I have the outline, I have everything, I wrote everything. Now I'm in the editing process. And I discovered stuff about life and myself. And I'm like, ah, yeah, I cannot really, it doesn't make sense anymore. Because I learned stuff and now, yeah, so I have to backtrack.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, and the backtracking is also always a part of it, I think. This is also where we tend to think in a linear way,
mm-hmm.
in that we think that a project is just you start at the beginning and then you get to the end and it's done.
Yeah.
When creative projects, and especially when we struggle with perfectionism and procrastination, I think that it's very important to remember that we, as creatives, almost everyone work in drafts, in that, okay, you have a rough draft in the beginning and then you realize things about the project that you then take with you into the next draft.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always some component of drafts and evolution and letting your project develop and learning about it along the way as well.
Yeah. It's so complex. That's why you need a coach like you.
Yeah. It is complex. But yeah, that's also what makes it fun, I think.
Yeah, yeah. So I have so many questions, but let's see what I think of asking. So I found you on Pinterest, like I said at the beginning, and it was an article about slow living and how you started with that, and now how you are not necessarily into that anymore. I don't remember the exact words. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So I discovered slow living when I had been blogging about creativity and I was starting to like being able to work on my novel more consistently. And I had sort of, I had moved through my creative fears to the degree where I was able to create without having constant blocks. And so that meant that I was really excited. I was really inspired. I was working a lot on my creative projects alongside a full-time job. And I was getting to the point where I was pushing myself a little bit too hard. I was getting stressed in my projects and started researching how I could find more balance. And that's how I discovered slow living. So for me, slow living was a way of shifting to different pace, of embracing more patience. I can be a quite impatient person. and I can be a person who wants to do things. I want to do more things than I'm able to. And I underestimate how long things take and all of those things. But I think it's very common. I'm very easily inspired for things. So, I needed to find a way to have a creative life that was also balanced and spacious, and I could take my time with things. And and this also led me into wanting my life to be more like that, having more space in it. So I did write and blog quite a lot about slow living during a couple of years when I was exploring it and understanding it and figuring out what it meant for me. And I think that what happened for me with that was that it started out as a lifestyle and as a concept, and that helped me use that sort of lifestyle markers and the things to explore what it was for me. And when I had sort of learned and taken everything from it that I could, then it started feeling too much like applying a lifestyle to my life when I had integrated the lessons I had learned from slow living, and I didn't really need it as a lifestyle and as a concept anymore. And I think that lifestyles in general, they have a tendency to be like a little bit simplistic and a little bit slow living, minimalism, those kind of things, they tend to become about the sort of outside view on it that we see online, and especially on visual platforms. Like I had my YouTube channel, and I think that there especially slow living became a lot about sort of having a life that looks slow from the outside rather than actually integrating the things that are what makes it slow for you. So I let go of the term slow living, but my philosophy is still very much that I think balance is really important, that I think that we need to allow ourselves to take the time we need to work on our creative projects and to be more patient with it.
Yeah. And to, I guess, also I saw you go a lot in nature, and this gives you a lot of energy or rest, or this gives you what you need to reset, maybe.
Yes. All of these sort of slow living activities that you can pick and choose from to find more balance in your life. And for me, that is a lot about nature walks. I live very close to forests and lakes. And so that is a big part of how I stay balanced while navigating creative projects and business and part-time job as a content writer and all of the things. So,
because you were talking about the hustle culture. It's more from the US. I feel maybe less in the countries we live in, but
yeah, a little bit less.
Yeah. But yeah, it's really on social media, it's very present. I feel like build your business and make that much money and that much time.
Yeah.
And one part of me is like, yeah, I want that. And another part of me is like, I'm not going to work 12 hours a day I want to be self-employed to be able to chill, right? To be able to not do the 9 to 5. Or more, to do my own rules, kind of.
Yes. Yeah. And that to me is also about enjoying the process of it. If you're just hustling and trying to do things as quickly as possible and just rushing through your projects or towards your goals, then you're not going to be able to enjoy the journey of making it. And again, with not obsessing about the end result as much, but enjoying the process of it, that that to me is key.
Yeah, it's if you're not enjoying the process, why do it?
What's the point? Yeah, what's the point?
How do you feel when you write?
How do I feel when I write?
When there is no resistance.
Nowadays writing is, I don't struggle that much with resistance, unless it's like, for example, now with a novel that I've been talking about throughout this this interview, I did send it to publishers to try to get it published. I didn't manage that in that round, but I did get some feedback. So I'm now at the stage of another rewrite. See if I can integrate that feedback and make another version and pitch that again to publishers. And if that doesn't work out, then I'll move on to another book project and see if I have better luck with the next one. Again, with the patience, most authors, at least here in Sweden, they don't manage to get their first book published. Just being patient with the process. Anyhow, so if I haven't worked on a novel for a while, I will probably feel some resistance towards it, picking it back up when it has been resting for a long time. In those moments, I can feel resistance and be like, oh, I'll prioritize something else with other things to do. But other than that, I don't have that much resistance around writing now. So how would I feel when I write? If it's a good writing day, I will be in flow, and so I will be just very focused and be working with sort of what I'm trying to say and what I'm trying to if it's fiction I'm writing, then what I'm trying to express through the scenes and such, just be very focused and in the moment, which is what you want to be, I would say, in creative projects. And otherwise, I do have like a calm rhythm around my work, and that is very important to me. So I try to always create nice moments for my work. I often have a cup of tea, maybe I'll light a candle, things like that. So it's a nice little moment as well.
Nice. Yeah. And do you, so you said you feel in flow and focused. Do you think also that creativity is a part of, how can I say this? Expressing your creativity is a part of staying healthy?
Yes, I think it's, I don't really divide people into creatives and non-creatives, but I think creativity is more important for certain people and less important for other people. And for the people who creativity is important, I would say that actually creating is incredibly important for mostly mental health, but in extension, physical health as well, since they are connected. So yes, and I know that flow has been described as the ultimate emotion, the ultimate experience, and whatever brings you flow. Like for people who are more into, like my partner's, he likes to get computer games. So flow for him is being in the game, for example, while flow for me is writing. So whatever it is that brings you flow, I think that those are the things that to really try to make space for and prioritize, and also create environment for flow to happen, so that we not just get stuck in that resistance and feeling bad through the whole experience.
Yeah, for some people can be sports also.
Yeah,
I always wonder if everybody needs to be to do one thing that's creative. And I don't have the answer, but I see that for some people, going for a run or to the gym is their thing to be able to release the pressure or feel good.
Yeah.
But I still think secretly that everybody needs to do something creative in a way or another.
Yeah. Hard to imagine for us that you wouldn't want to create. I really do think that everyone is creative and has creativity in us. I think that that's what makes us human. Mm-hmm. But then it's not as important to everyone.
Yeah, I'm still reading the book My Unicorn Space. I don't remember who wrote that, but she was on the Reese Witherspoon book club.
Cool.
It's kind of big.
Yeah.
And she wrote this so she's all about equality in the relationship for tasks you have to do at home and how women usually tend to do much more with the kids and chores and stuff.
Yeah.
And so she wrote a book about that. And then her second book, My Unicorn Space, is about, because she probably saw how amazing it was to write that book for her.
Yeah.
And then I'm not sure actually exactly. I know. It was because of the pandemic. And then you're at home more. And okay, what could we do? I don't remember. It's a great book anyway. But it's more for people who have kids and need to find that space for themselves. How she was saying that most of the time women, they don't think of themselves when they have kids. And I don't have kids, so I have all the time in the world. It's great. and how it can be really good for mind, body, soul to have that creative time. And it's not self-care, and it's really expressing yourself through creativity.
Yes, definitely. And I think that having kids and being a woman and having that being affected by culture of you're just supposed to be there for the kids. I see that in my coaching clients that makes it even more difficult to make space for and prioritize creative projects that feel like they are not important or necessary, and they're just for you, and it's hard to make it them a priority and to essentially say that they are more important than doing something else that you could be doing. And I think that's also to rewrite those stories of who we are supposed to be as mothers, for example, that is very important.
And I just had the image of a grandma. I know my grandparents were like that. The other grandparents, not so much, but my grandma used to knit and she was always crochet. She was always doing something with her hands, you know, watching TV. Like, it was just integrated in the family. She was doing those things, and my granddad would always build something or repair something. And maybe back in the days where they didn't have to create space for their creative projects because they were already integrated in their everyday life.
Yes.
And our parents probably lost, my parents lost that.
Yeah.
And then now maybe we are finding it again with computers and cameras and other things.
Yeah, that's very true. And like, to not underestimate those like everyday creative things, crafty things. Also things like baking can be very much a creative expression. I think that's a really great point. And how being sort of very modern and buying everything and everything being sort of ready to use and things like that, that we have lost a little bit of the everyday creativity and bringing more of that back. That's probably a good thing for us.
If you are listening to the podcast, what is it for you, maybe? What do you do? What do you like to do every day? Because I think it's an important component to actually like doing it.
Yes.
And not do it just for the result, like we already said.
Yeah.
And in your podcast, I don't remember which one, you say that in the idea stage, you're very sensitive to criticism.
Yes.
And you recommend not sharing your ideas at that stage. But I was wondering if also later, if you usually tell people to, how do you tell people to navigate that phase? Because from experience, there are some people I can talk to about it and some people that I can't because they won't understand it.
Yes.
No matter what it is.
Yeah. And I think figuring out who those people are that won't understand it and those people who do understand it and talking to them differently about creative things, I think that's quite important because the creative process, it is quite particular and people haven't done much of that themselves, don't necessarily understand sort of the process of creating. And I think if they get to have an opinion, especially in sensitive parts of the process, then that can lead you in a direction that isn't right for you or for the project, because we're sort of taking advice from from the wrong people. Just like with anything, that if they don't have the insight needed to give good advice, then probably don't listen to their advice that closely. But with the idea stage, why I think that's the most sensitive probably is because then you're still trying to get to know your idea yourself and you're trying to put it into words. And it's often sort of like we have a feeling about something. We have like, it's often quite vague in the beginning and we sort of know specific things, but we don't know the whole picture. And we're sort of trying to uncover that. And when we're in that process, our ideas can sound strange and scattered and they don't necessarily make a lot of sense. And if we share too much about them, especially to wrong people, that can bring sort of outside view and judgment towards the idea that you don't need when you're trying to figure out what it is. So with people who are also creatives who get it and so that can handle these sort of the messy stage of it, then absolutely, if someone you trust, you can absolutely talk about the idea. I tend to with things like book ideas. I know that if I talk about them too early, they sort of lose their magic a little bit. So I'm careful about sharing too much about things like that. In the early stages. But yeah, it's also something to figure out for yourself where and when you're ready to share about something and get sort of a different view on it, an outside view on your project.
Yeah. And sometimes you'll learn the hard way.
Yeah. Most of us do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's important. I've definitely learned the hard way too. And I was like, not understanding what had just happened. Why isn't she happy? Or why did she do that face?
Yeah, and people's own fears, since creative projects can be quite scary and unknown and all of those things. And other people have also heard the stories of how hard it is to make it as an artist or writer. People can, their own fears can model it as well.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. I check my notes again. Clarity takes time.
It does.
And creatives get frustrated.
Yeah. Frustration is not an uncommon aspect of the creative process.
Yeah, I think we talked about that also, that it just takes time and we need to accept it. And then, yeah, don't stay there forever. Yeah, I think I have everything.
Wonderful.
The slow living, the resistance. If you have something you want to share, something important, something you want the whole world to know.
No pressure.
Yeah.
No, but I think that what we need to remember is that if we are experience resistance and things like that, first of all, that there is a way out of it. The creative process doesn't have to be like that. I think sometimes the way we talk about creativity is that, oh, it's so difficult and writing is always a struggle and things like that. And it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
It can be. It doesn't have to be. So you can heal a lot of those things and build better processes. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is also to remember that there is space for all creativity. And yes, maybe there's no space for all writers to get published with their books, for example, but that doesn't mean that there isn't space for all creativity to exist and that it can be important for you and for a smaller circle, even if it won't be like a bestseller or something,
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
We need to remember that just because it doesn't have some kind of external success marker,
mm-hmm.
that is not important,
yeah.
That we can value these things differently, and creativity should probably be valued differently than just commercial success.
Yeah. Amazing. Thank you very much. When
Thank
is
you.
Your coaching program starting?
So I am working on it right now, and I don't know when this podcast will go out, but in sort of mid late October I'm going to start taking bookings for this coaching program, and then it will be an evergreen program that I will have and book a couple of months at a time, one to one with coaches, creatives that I will coach.
And you still do one-on-ones on the side?
Yeah, I do one-on-ones, like solo sessions. I do those as well. And then there is this package that is 5 sessions to work on a dream project. And I have my community as well. They can also join for more group support.
Do you have that community on Facebook or something, or?
That is it's hosted on a little bit of variety of things, but it's the membership community where we have monthly Zoom calls, we have a Slack channel, we have weekly co-working hours, and we have a little bit of a vault of things that you can use in your creative journey as well on your own.
Nice.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
So you just started that podcast?
Yes.
And I will put all the links.
Wonderful.
In the show notes. I really enjoy listening to it. It's a change from the fast American podcast I usually listen to.
Yeah.
And how everything is amazing.
I hear you.
Nice.
Thank you. Glad you like it.
And you still have your YouTube channel as well.
Yes, yes. I post videos a little bit less often, but I do
mm-hmm.
share them now and then.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining today. And
thank you for having me on.
Thank you.
A real pleasure.
Likewise. And let's chat about Sweden right after this.
Yes. Let's.
Thank you all for listening.
Thank you.